So we've, over the last couple of months, we've been going through all these different forms of graces and traits and so forth. And so we're going to end on the last one, which is love. And I think when we think of love, I've always wanted to start off by saying, what is love, and see if the heads move. But I tried that with our camp this year, and I thought I was weird. I mean, they're like, what are you doing? Because that was actually our topic for camp this past year. We talked about love, and we talked about the love that we have for our neighbors, the love we have for our enemies, the love we have for ourselves, the love we have for God, and God and Jesus' love for us. And it was a great week. I mean, I think the lessons, our speakers did a great job of really bringing that message across. And you can really tell that the kids really took that in and hopefully gained a better understanding of what love is. And I think another thing about that word is I feel like it's overused. I think we talk about love kind of too freely. We talk about our love for some type of food, or like Danny Gardner's love for the Tennessee Vols. Or, is that right? But no, I think we use it just so freely that we don't really understand how powerful that word really is, and how much it really does, how impactful that word is. And that's why when we get into the lesson today, we're going to really focus on one part of that word. We know in the Bible it talks about different types of love. Let me turn it back on. There we go. It's going to point somewhere. See, I've gone that way. Okay. I'm going to go pull them all up here. Was that you? Okay. Let me try something. Okay. There we go. All right. All right. So the first one, you can see, like I said, we've talked about these the different types of love before that's mentioned in the Bible. Eros, which is really the love between a husband and a wife. Storge, which refers to the bond and affection shared between family members, which is obviously a very strong bond. Philia, which we talked about last week with the brotherly kindness and our love for one another. And the last one's agape, which is, if you think about the first three, they're more of a like emotion, and they're more of a feeling, where agape is really it's a action. It's a deed. It's something that we should be doing. And so today that's what we're gonna focus on, and seeing it in more of the form of benevolence and just act of goodwill. And during this discussion, I want y'all to jump in anytime. Last time I put too much material and I talked way too much. So I'm gonna try to open it up for questions every once in a while. But if you have any remarks, please interrupt me. All right, so the next part, so Christian love, whether it's exercised toward brethren or toward men, generally is not an impulse from the feelings. It does not always run with the natural inclinations, nor does it spend itself only upon those for whom some affinity is discovered. Love seeks the welfare of all and works no ill to any. Love seeks opportunity to do good to all men, and especially toward them that are of the household of faith. So like I said, this is not really an emotional type of love. This is a love that requires action, love that requires us to be observant and be able to find ways that we can help others, and to be willing to sacrifice and help those that are in need. So what we're going to do for a little while here is we're going to look at 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. So the Bible technically doesn't really define what love is. It doesn't give a true definition of what love is, but what it does is it shows you examples throughout the entire Bible of how love is shown towards others, and how we're supposed to reflect it in ourselves. So in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7, would somebody mind reading that for us, please? Okay, so before we jump into each one of these, do we think, is love easy? And we're talking more of the agape style of love. Is it easy? Exactly. Right. And we're going, like I said, we'll go through each of these briefly. But yeah, if you think it, if you look at this verse, you talk about love suffers long or patient. We'll go ahead and jump on that one. So, anybody short-tempered? Yeah, Wes is over there pointing at Stephanie, huh? Yeah, Wes just pointed at Stephanie there, so I guess it's legal. But yeah, you think about long-suffering and just the love that we have to have in a marriage, if you have a teenage daughter, she's in the class tonight, or just anybody that you're around. I mean, the people you work with, the members in the congregation. I mean, we have to have things we have to be patient about and not just blow up anytime something doesn't go our way, right? So this is, like I said, as far as being difficult, this is definitely a difficult one, but it's something I think we all need to definitely strive to be better at. Love is kind. Not only does love put up with the others, it also is ready and willing to meet their needs. We should represent this in our daily lives. And like I said, this is probably something that we don't do on a regular basis either. I mean, we're going through our everyday lives and we see something and we're just like, we're too busy. We're not going to help them out. But I think with all these aspects, you can really take into account the golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And you think about how if you see somebody that maybe looks like they're having a very good day, just going up to them and asking how they're doing, or you see somebody who's struggling with something struggling putting groceries in their car. I mean, doing little things like that. Just being able, like I said, you have to be observant to what's going on to be able to really execute a lot of these different things. But love is kind, and it's something that we that is obviously very visible to those that we help out, but also to those that are around us. Love does not envy. Love does not allow us to be jealous or envious of another person's blessings and successes. We should be excited for others' good fortune. And I know that should be pretty obvious, but I know there are times where there's probably something we feel like, well, why did they get the promotion and I didn't? Or why did they get this happened to them and not me? Or why does everything bad happen to me? I mean, you think about these things and it's something that I think we've got to adjust, because you can't have that feeling towards somebody else and represent what a Christian should be. Love does not parade itself and is not puffed up. So the first part of these, not parade itself, it basically describes the speech or action associated with pride. And the second part, not puffed up, represents the attitude of pride. Love does not allow a man's arrogance to inflate and control his head. We should be humble in all we do. And that's, I think that's pretty observant as well. I mean, people can see that. If we do something good for somebody, we're not going around bragging about it to everybody that we're around. We do it because we want to do it. And it, even though we want to make sure people are aware of it, people see it. People see these good things that we do. We don't have to share it with everybody around us. So anything as far as these four so far, I want to break it up and kind of any comments on these four things as far as what love represents. Right. For those who are at home, yeah, it's the selflessness of love. It's not all about you. It's about doing something for other people, but it's more for the action itself and for the deed itself, and not for just your own attention and so forth. Anything else? Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, so having your heart, it knows what you should be doing, right? I mean, it knows what actions you should take in whatever circumstance you're in. Anything else? Yes, sir. Absolutely. All right, anything else on those? All right, the next one is love does not behave rudely. So this is translated to act against the scheme, to go against what is accepted. Other translations show it as, in the King James it says, does not behave itself unseemly. In the New American Standard it says, does not act unbecomingly. But it never conducts itself in a way that is contrary to accepted standards of decency. And basically, having you think about it, how can you show love if you behave rudely, right? That those are completely opposite words. Next, love does not seek its own. So love considers the wants and needs of others. It causes one to deny himself and seek the best interests of others. And in Philippians 2, verse 3 through 4, it says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you the interests of others. So we should be example to those around us. Those we correspond with, how we correspond with others, but we are that example. As Christians, when we go into the world, I mean, we are the ones that are supposed to be setting that example towards others and being able to look for ways that we can help other people. All right, love is not provoked. This phrase is translated from a Greek word, which means to stimulate or to stir one to anger. Love does not look for reasons to become upset or irritated at personal offenses. Somebody basically says something to you like, "Oh, you can't do this" or whatever. I mean, I know it's not easy. Like I said, none of this stuff is really easy. That's why there's circumstances where we have to basically try to find the best way to address a lot of these things. But, we're not looking to become angry about things. We gotta make sure that you don't know what type of perspective they're coming from. But you wanna make sure you can try to at least find, some way to find out what you can do to help, make the situation better. But, we should find ways to not become upset. Love thinks no evil. So this phrase is translated, from a Greek word, which was a term for bookkeeping or entering debts on a ledger. It does not keep a running account of offenses with a view toward reckoning the account. Love does not take into account a wrong suffered. So love is forgiveness. We have to forget things, right? We can't be carrying something around for so long that it really puts a strain on the relationship. And we've got to do what we can to forgive it and move on. Love does not rejoice in iniquity. It rejoices in truth. It's active goodwill towards others. While sin brings pain and loss to others, love takes no pleasure in sin, finds no satisfaction in discussing the sins of others, like through gossip, and cannot rejoice when error is taught, practiced, or tolerated. So once again, it goes back towards our... like I said, that goodwill, showing that respect towards others, and provide. Like I said, you can't put the scenario as far as how others are feeling or how they're perceived in whatever it is that you're talking about. But you don't want to be the one that's going to be causing any type of pain with others. Anything else on these? Before we finish this off, anything on these comments here? So behaving rudely, seeking its own, not provoked, thinks no evil, and does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Yes, sir.
When you give people that sort of live loner type existence, they might come to church, but they pop out about as quick as they pop in. And they almost don't want to get engaged. Mm. Because once you engage with people, once you're involved, just think of your own family. And probably some families are messes, and there may be messes because of not. Mm. You can't do any of that.
Right.
I mean, I realize you could envy somebody from a long distance. That's all, some of those things are possible. Some of those things are not possible up there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that's what love is. Like you said, to your point, I mean, everybody's different. Everybody it basically can be approached in different ways. I mean, you got some people you might have to be a little more forthcoming as far as just trying to build that relationship and trying to build that communication, or just having a conversation with them. Where there's other people you just get within 10 feet of them and they're gonna pull you in and talk to you, right? But yeah, we like I said, that's once again, keeps going to the observance and just finding ways that you can be impactful to these other people and show that you care for them, show that you have some respect or just interest in what they're doing or who they are. Yeah, Jake? Yeah, exactly. And also, I mean, you got to be willing to make that initial step too. I mean, you got to be the first one. I mean, you got to have that confidence to make that first step, whether it's to talk to somebody, help somebody, just ask them what they need. We've got to be willing to have that type of attitude where we're always looking for ways to help somebody out. All right, anything else? Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's what this agape love is. I mean, you can't think of yourself. You're constantly having to be selfless and do that deed. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, Jesus is the example. We think we have some verses on that in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you think about what Jesus did. I mean, there's no better example of what love is, and as far as an action and a deed. I mean, he came to this earth and lived the way he did and died the way he did for every single one of us. So, all right, love bears all things. So this is translated from the Greek word stego, which refers to the practice of protecting or preserving something by covering. Love will not ignore sin. It will warn, rebuke, and chasten as needed. However, love instinctively protects. It does everything it can to cover another person's sin and shame. And in 1 Peter 4 and verse 8, it says, above all, love each other deeply because love covers over a multitude of sins. And I think that just that kind of tells you like who we're supposed to be overall. I mean, just we have to be somebody who is always looking to protect ourselves, protect others, protect the church. I mean, our families and so forth. I mean, we've got to represent that in all we do. Love believes all things. So love is neither gullible nor cynical. It believes and expects the best in others while giving them the benefit of the doubt. Obviously, not an easy thing sometimes. Love hopes all things. When things look bad, love compels us to hope for the best in others. And that's kind of like what we're talking about other, like what Jake was mentioning earlier. I mean, we can't just assume something whenever when we're interacting with someone. We have to basically think of the best for them, hope for the best. And then endures all things. So love does not give up on others, and it cannot be conquered by other failures or by their failures. So anything else on these last four? Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. All right, so the next, so if I ask the question, how does loving God and loving our neighbor allow us to keep God's law? Oops, hold on, I'm jumping ahead here. So let's turn to Matthew 22, 37 through 40. And then if somebody else can turn to Romans 13, 8 through 10. Romans 22, 37 through 40. And Romans 13, 8 through 10. Whoever's got Matthew, please. It's a pretty impactful passage, isn't it? It says, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. I mean, what else is there? Everything we should be doing, we should be focused around God. And it says, this is the first and greatest commandment. And then the second, love your neighbor as yourself. And it says, these two commandments hang on the law and the prophets. I mean, that right there just shows you how great these two commands are and how much they're supposed to mean to each one of us. Romans 13, 8 through 10. No, you're good. It's through 10. All right, so once again, it shows just what the power is of loving your neighbor. And so I don't think we actually define this yet. So who is your neighbor? Yeah. It's everyone around us, right? And one of the examples that in the text for the lesson today was talking about the Good Samaritan. And they talked about how that was helping his neighbor and how that, I mean, he saw that the man was in need. And so he went over there to help him. I mean, neighbor, when we think of that word, a lot of times we just think of just those that are close by or somewhere, but that's everybody. That's everybody around us. That's everybody we come in contact with. That's who we need to be showing these things towards. And like I said, that with our love of God are like I said, two of the greatest commands that they've given us. Any comments on that? All right, and then in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13, Paul's talking to the Corinthians, and he talks about how love is the greatest gift. And it says, and now these three remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. And then in Colossians 3, verse 12 through 14, he talks once again about the same thing. He's just basically showing the importance of what love is with these other graces and so forth. So, I think we can go through verse after verse throughout the entire Bible and just see other examples of how important love is and how much it should be represented in what we do. So love is the greatest command, gift, grace, and virtue, yet it is the most difficult to master, to learn, and to truly add to our character. Everything else in the list leads to and supports love. Once these characteristics are present, love can be added as the crowning jewel. When we learn to love as God loves, we have learned to live as God's true spiritual children, and this is the closest we come to partaking of God's nature. So who teaches us how to love? And in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 9, I mean, it's pretty obvious. God teaches us how to love. You think about what God has done for us. We talk about this a lot in our prayers and just our everyday, a lot of our invitations and so forth, but we can't even comprehend the love that God has for us and what He's done for us. I mean, we take too many things for granted these days. And if we were to really sit down and just really concentrate on what all we have, I mean, the littlest things can be so impactful for us. And we just, like I said, we take this for granted way too often, I believe. In 1 John 4, 7 through 8, So how do we truly come to understand the subject of love? I actually got it on here, so you don't have to turn to it. I'm sorry. It says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love." And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. I mean, if we have to love one another to represent the love that God has given to us. I mean, we're supposed to represent God in all we do as far as showing that love towards others. Any comments on that? All right. And then, how does God demonstrate His love for mankind? In 1 John 4 and verse 9, it says, "In this, the love of God was manifested toward us, that God sent His Son," and so forth. Basically what we're talking about here is that He showed His love by sending His Son for us, right? He gave that sacrifice. He gave Christ for us, so we have that hope. And then in John 3:16, same thing, that He so loved the world that He gave His Son. I mean, you think about that sacrifice and that His willingness to do that. So what motivates us to love others? Love is motivated by goodwill, not by emotion or merit. Like I said, we're talking about the agape version of this. So can somebody read Romans 5, 6 through 8? And while you're turning there, in 1 John 4 and 10, it says, "In this is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son to be the propitiation for our sins." Once again, same thing as what we're talking about. He expressed His love for us by giving His Son. What about Romans 5, 6 through 8?
"While we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person, one would dare even to die. But God shows His love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us."
Yeah, so we've talked about the sacrifice that God's made for us. And right there, we're talking about the example that Christ gave for us and that love He had for us. And we, as Christians, we can at least do a little bit of showing our love towards others on this earth to represent what God and Jesus have done for us. Yes, Chris?
So it's interesting that word goodwill. In the business world, goodwill is defined as what you pay purchase price for a company that's over the tangible value of the asset. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then, finally, love must be shown to everyone. And this kind of goes back to what, like I said, what we were talking about in our at our camp this year. We were talking with the campers, but we show how we should be, how we ought to love one another. I mean, especially as brethren, we should ultimately have that willingness to find out what we can do to help others. But there's three verses, there's three different categories, and like I said, these are all things that we talked about this year. But the love that we must be showing to everyone, and one of them is to God, and our love that we have for God. In Matthew 22, verse 37, can someone read that one for me, please? Absolutely. So is anything lacking from that? No. I mean, we're supposed to love Him with everything we have. So what are some ways we can show our love towards God?
Live righteously.
What else?
Our love
Showing our love towards others. Okay.
Keeping
His commandments. Yep. What else? Yeah. Yeah, how we go about our worship services. I mean, we meet here three times a week for 4 hours total in a week. How much are we giving in those 4 hours? And I think about it a lot just in the Lord's Supper. I mean, you got that short time that we're remembering Christ's death. I mean, what are we doing during that time to remember Christ and that sacrifice He gave for us? But I think if we really sat down and thought about the attention that we put towards it and the effort that we put towards the worship service, we probably would feel like, okay, I can do a better job than that. I mean, this is our worshiping our God, and this is the God that provided everything for us. That's the least we can do, is give our best effort in worshiping Him. And we could also, I mean, and part of it goes with the commandments, but I mean, constantly studying, learning more, right? Opening the Bible more than just in our worship service. Praying on a regular basis. I mean, how do you build that relationship without prayer? To really show your love, I mean, that's something we have to do. It's something we, especially as Christians, we have to show that love that we have for Him by having that communication and having that relationship with God. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, there'd be a lot more people doing that, right? Yeah, I think probably one of the examples you saw was a gentleman who went out with a grill and just had a truckload of food and was basically just cooking for everybody there. I know my sister, she's taking her kids out the last couple, she lives out there, and taking her kids out there the last couple of days to go around to these neighborhoods and kind of see how they can help. And, yeah, I mean, it should be pretty obvious. I mean, the things that we could be doing and should be doing and setting that example for the world around us. Anything else? All right, what about Matthew 22 and verse 39? This kind of goes with what Sarita is saying too, with the storm and helping those around us. But what does Matthew 22 verse 39 say? Yeah, I mean, I think we all like ourselves, right? I think we all have, we feel like we want to do what's best for ourselves, right? So why not do what's best for those around us, our neighbors? Yeah, Jake? Oh, yeah.
Of loving yourself. And the one thing I keep going back to is kind of what I talk about in 1 John chapter 4, verse 19. We love because He first loved us. Going back to Chris's point about goodwill, we have a value. We are worthy to God. Can we understand it? Can we explain it? No. But He loves us so much. He sees value in us that we don't see in ourselves. That should give us motivation to understand that we're important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's especially for a lot of young people. That's why we did a whole lesson on loving yourself. Was you think about these teenage kids and stuff, and I don't think they none of them really truly understand what I think what true love is, and especially for being confident, having the confidence in themselves, and being able to. Understand just how important they are and how important they are to others and the influence that they have on others. But, yeah, I mean, that having that love of self is definitely, I mean, you got to understand that first before you can really show your love towards other people. Anything else? The last one on here is for your enemies. And we talk about things that are hard. This is definitely not something that's an easy thing to do. Matthew 5:43-48. Whoever has that. Yeah. So, how hard is it to show love towards somebody who's not gonna do that towards you? Who's gonna talk bad about you, or somebody who's gonna do things to you that are not pleasing? I mean, what mentally? I mean, how hard is that to show love back towards them? It's almost impossible, isn't it? At times. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And honestly, if you have somebody that you do have some conflict with, I mean, what's the only way you're going to fix that? You got to have one of you to take a step, right? To show that love or show some type of common ground you can build off of. Jeff? Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, You could be as nice as you possibly can every single time you interact, like, and they still come back at you. But there's nothing you can do. Your job is to do what you're supposed to be doing towards them to help improve the relationship or at least get it to where it's not so confrontational. Right. All right. Anything else on that? That's right. Right. Good question. Yeah, that can happen too, right? I gotcha. Well, yeah, okay, good point. finishing up, just talking about love and how we're to love. So we're taught by God how to love others. God does not teach us to only love our friends. He teaches us by his example to love those who curse us, hate us, and persecute us. It's in the obtaining of this virtue that we can become partakers of divine nature. And then when we learn how to love others the way God loves them, we're learning how to act like God. And I think that's what we're supposed to be doing as Christians on this earth, is to represent who he is and who his people are to those around us, whether it's easy or not. And like I said, love's not easy to exemplify a lot of times, but it's something that we have to do as Christians. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, so if the government turned on us and decided, hey, you can't worship anymore, I mean, what are we to do? I mean, that's where you probably gain that conflict between the two, right? Because you know what you're supposed to be doing, but they're trying to keep you from doing it. So yeah, you're going to definitely cause some tension. So anything else? Yes, sir.
I
Right. Right.
God has enemies. Satan is enemy. And there's not any arguing that. So those that constitute the kingdom of Satan then would be the enemies of those that constitute the kingdom of God.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's and I think there's probably very few, if any, of us that have really had to really interact with somebody that's just completely against God. And I mean, I'm sure some of us had some interactions with that, but to really try to bring God down and really try to bring us down for following God. I mean, that's something that hopefully not many of us have to face, but it is something that does happen. And it depends on, I mean, other places are worse than others, but yeah, you could definitely have a long discussion about that. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much.